Last weekend, a UN envoy met with Afghanistan's higher education minister over that country's ban last month on women working in NGOs, non-governmental groups like the UN, and the ban on education for women above the sixth grade. The envoy said the Taliban official was unmovable. Well, our next guests are picking up higher ed for Afghan women, one student at a time. Kamal Ahmad is an educator, entrepreneur, and co-founder of the Asian University for Women. It's in Bangladesh. It offers full scholarships to women from 18 countries, which have restricted higher education. There are currently about 1,500 students. 350 Afghan women are already on campus. More are on the way. Kamal Ahmad, welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And we also want to bring in Dr. Anne Hallward, a mental health and trauma specialist enlisted by Kamal to help counsel the women who frequently arrive with PTSD and other trauma-related issues. And Dr. Hallward, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And Kamal, how do you do this? Did you buy buildings? How did you lure people to teach at a school that didn't exist yet? How'd that happen?
Well, we started in a modest way. We rented a couple of apartment buildings and turned them into classrooms, dormitories, library, laboratories. We had a grant, fortunately, from the Gates Foundation, but more than money, more than anything else, we were fortunate to have a charter from the Parliament of Bangladesh, which guaranteed that this university would have institutional autonomy and academic freedom, because quite often for most universities, the long arm of the government reaches in into everything, whether it's curriculum, teacher appointment, student selection.
Well, I want to focus on the women from Afghanistan. No educational possibilities. What do you think when you heard that?
You're horrified. You think the Stone Age is gone and we're in a modern era, and such things that can openly happen is always difficult to accept. For those of us who have worked in Afghanistan, we're aware of the history when this was, in fact, the policy in the earlier era where the Taliban ruled. But having just been in Afghanistan and having met with a lot of the senior officials, I thought we would have more time before things would go down this way.
Yeah. We know the first 171 Afghan women came more than a year ago. Now you're up to 350. There are another 250 still trying to get there. What happens? Negotiate with the Taliban? I mean, how does that work? Because it's really hard to get out of Afghanistan. We understand they have to pay $2,000 for a passport, and they have to get permission to go. So how does that happen?
I went to Afghanistan and briefed the Minister of Education, Minister of Higher Education, the Foreign Minister. And interestingly enough, when I was there about 6 months ago, none of the officials in charge said this is not something they want to do. There were tactical issues raised about the mahram, which means that a male family member has to escort the student out. But there was no blanket opposition to the idea of girls or women's education. And we hope more will be able to come.
We know that some of your groups of students got inside the airport, had their boarding passes, but then they had to surrender their boarding passes and leave because they weren't accompanied by appropriate guardians, male guardians. And I just want to bring in Dr. Hallward. You knew Kamal Ahmad from your days at Harvard together. He reached out to you and said, I need help. Help with what?
He reached out to me asking me to help design a whole mental health system there. During COVID, they had lost their on-site counselors. And he said, we have, you know, all these women from Afghanistan arriving. Many of them have been traumatized. Many are afraid they'll never be able to go home. Who doesn't want to support young Afghanistan, you know, Afghan women getting an education? You know, the traditional Western approach is you sign up to see a therapist or a psychiatrist and you have a one-on-one conversation. But the whole context was that there weren't counselors to do it. So we had to think in a very public health way. So there were three approaches we took. The first was to bring in a series of lecturers to talk about subjects that are very hard to talk about. Stigma about mental health is alive and well. And one of the things that we know can help with mental health is creative self-expression. So I got in touch with my colleague, Alyssa Eli, who had, along with social worker Janice Smith, had participated in a program called The Things They Carry. And this was started by an analyst in D.C., Carrie Malawista. She had recruited a volunteer therapist from along the East Coast to help frontline healthcare workers write about their experiences as a way to help them with the kind of fear and burnout they were struggling with. So we decided to revamp the whole program for these Afghan young women. So we recruited 26 therapists from all along the East Coast, each to lead a group with six young women from Afghanistan, to write in small groups with each other about some of their dreams, some of their hopes, what they miss, as a way to cultivate friendship and community. So much of what contributes to mental health is a feeling of closeness and being understood. Mm-hmm. And friendship is among women is one of the most life-giving forces.
Well, one of the graduates of the Asian University for Women did a popular TED Talk. This is Sabina Yasmin. She used to work in a factory in Bangladesh and watched one woman have to continue working after a huge needle pierced her hand.
I could do nothing. I felt so helpless. One finger has a bandage on it. Needle will go inside from there, one finger coming out from other side. The next day they will work with that. Why? It's because in factories, even if you're injured, if you take leave for a day, they cost you money.
So she was able to go to a university after watching someone with a needle through their finger who had to keep working because that's all the option was at that time. But Kamal, Ahmad, I want to bring you back in. Again, co-founder of the Asian University for Women. That's just one. And maybe there's 100 more coming from Afghanistan. Does it feel like just a small drop in a huge ocean of need?
Well, it is a small drop, but this is an extraordinary group bent on taking their education to help lots of others. We may have only 350 Afghan students out of a country of 40 million people, but each of them is determined to help others who remain in whatever way they can. For example, right now they're engaged in teaching, online teaching, the young women who are still in Afghanistan but cannot go to school. This is the kind of a drop in the ocean that doesn't evaporate, that only gains strength.
Well, so many questions I'm sure you ask. How dangerous will that be for one of your students to work online with their sisters, you know, when there's a ban on education in Afghanistan? And what happens if these women go back to those countries? But it sounds like for now, your goal is to just let them learn.
Yes, they're 18 to 22 years old. We know that they carry in their own hearts a commitment to do much more with their education than ordinary 18 or 22-year-olds may. They feel a deep obligation towards their country, towards their people.
Yeah.
We have received thus far 17,000 applications. We actually have 1,500 students, and the goal is to grow the university to about 11,000.
Wow. That's big. Whoa.
Kamal explained to me that not only did the students have to take, you know, the regular entrance exam to kind of get into college, but that the university selects for three qualities: a passionate response to injustice, a demonstration of an ability to be courageous, and the capacity for empathy. Mm. And that each of the students, you know, has been selected on these three qualities as measures of future leadership. These young women are extraordinary. And the world is going to need their leadership.
There's a whole group of students who used to be garment factory workers from Bangladesh. Now they're setting up their own factory for the first time ever in the history of that country, where you see a group of workers rising to set up their own factory and thereby re-envisioning what a garment factory could in fact look like with respect to how it treats workers. You know, once they have access to an education and a set of values, they can actually begin to change the world.
Quick question, is Malala involved at all?
I mean, we have our own Malalas. Every one of them are, in fact, somebody from the Chronicle of Higher Education came to spend a few weeks with us. And one of the things she said as she was leaving is, this is a college full of Malalas. Everyone she talked to seemed like a Malala.
That's Kamal Ahmad, co-founder of the Asian University for Women in Bangladesh. And we also spoke to Dr. Anne Hallward, who's been trying to help some of the women when they come to the school deal with their emotional and psychological issues. I want to thank you both and wish you both the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Malala, of course, is the Pakistani girl who was shot in the face for wanting an education and has become a leader in this field.